The three eggs which had been sent with them to begin the experiment were not, by the lights of Britain's breeders, any great prizes. One, a dirt common yellow reaper, sent over because there were 17 such eggs in the breeding grounds waiting. The second, a disappointing and extremely stunted little thing, which had unaccountably been produced out of a Parnassian and a checkered nettle, both heavyweights. The last and most promising of the three, large and handsomely mottled and striated, was the offspring of Arcady, the feral leader, and Ringe, the best fighter of his pack. There was no great enthusiasm for this egg in Britain, where the breeders, for the most part, viewed the newly recruited ferals as demons sent to wreak havoc and destruction upon their carefully designed lines, so it had been sent away. But it had quickly become the settled thing among the aviators who had been sent along as candidates for the new hatchlings to anticipate great things of the egg. "It stands to reason," Lawrence had overheard more than one officer say to another, "if that Ringe one should have got so big out in the wild, this one should do a good deal better with proper feeding and training, and no one could complain of the ferals' fighting spirit." Those young officers were now in something of a quandary, which Lawrence was not above grimly enjoying a little. They had been firm and united in their disdain, both for his personal treason and for what they saw as his failure to manage Temeraire properly. But now Rankin had come to supplant one of them and claim the best egg for himself. He was their most bitter enemy, and Temeraire's recalcitrance their best hope of denying him. "Ye mayn't have it at all," Temeraire had said at once, when he had been informed of the proposed arrangement, "and if he likes he can come up here and try and take it. I shall be very pleased to discuss it with him," darkly, in a way which bade fair to answer all of Jane's hopes. "My dear," Lawrence said, having lowered his letter, "I like the prospect as little as you. But if he shall be denied even the chance, and return to England thwarted, we have only deferred the devil. He will certainly be put to another egg there, where you may be certain the poor hatchling will have less opportunity to refuse, and the blame will certainly devolve upon Granby. The orders are for him, and the responsibility to carry them out."
"I am certainly not having Granby take the blame for anything," Iskerka said, raising her head, "and I do not see what the problem is anyway. The egg will be hatched by then, and why should it be any business of ours what it does after that? It can take him or not as it pleases."
Iskerka herself had hatched already, breathing fire, and with all the disobliging and determined character anyone could have imagined. She would certainly have had no difficulty in rejecting any unworthy candidates. Most hatchlings did not come from the shell with quite the same metal, however, and the aerial corps had developed many a technique and lure to ensure the successful harnessing of the beasts. Rankin had certainly prepared himself well. He had come over from the Beatrice with not only his two chests of personal baggage, but a pile of leather harness, some chainmail netting, and a sort of heavy leather hood.
"You throw it over the hatchling's head as it comes out of the shell if you're out of doors," Granby said when Lawrence now inquired, "and then it cannot fly away. When you take it off, the light dazzles their eyes, and then if you lay some meat in front of them, they're pretty sure to let you put the harness on if you will only let them eat. And some fellows like it because they say it makes them easier to handle. If you ask me," he added bitterly, "all it makes them is shy. They're never certain of their ground after."
"I wonder if you might be able to put me in the way of some cattle merchant," Rankin was saying to Riley and Lord Purbeck. "I intend to provide for the hatchling's first meal from my personal funds."
"Surely he can be restrained in some way," Lawrence said, low.
He was not yet beyond the heat of righteous anger, kindled all those years before when they had been unwilling witness to the cruelty of Rankin's treatment of his first dragon. Rankin was the sort of aviator beloved of the Navy Board. In his estimation, as in theirs, dragons were merely a resource, and a dangerous one, to be managed and restrained and used to their limits. It was the same philosophy which had rendered it not only tolerable, but desirable to contemplate destroying 10,000 of the French beasts through the underhanded, sneaking method of infection. Where Rankin might have been kind to Levitas, he had been indifferent. Where indifferent, deliberately cruel, all in the name of keeping his poor beast so downtrodden as to have no spirit to object to any demands made upon him. When Levitas had with desperate courage brought them back the warning of Napoleon's first attempt to cross the Channel in the year 5, and been mortally wounded in that effort, Rankin had left his dragon alone and slowly dying in a small and miserable clearing while he sought comfort for his own lesser injuries. It was a mode of service which had gone thoroughly out of fashion in the last century among most aviators, who increasingly preferred to better preserve the spirit of their partners. The government did not always agree, however, and Rankin was of an ancient dragon-keeping family who had preserved their own habits and methods and passed these along to the scions sent into the corps, at an age sufficiently delayed for these to be impressed upon them firmly, along with a conviction of their own superiority to the general run of aviators.
"He cannot be permitted to ruin the creature," Lawrence said. "We might at least bar him from use of the hood." "Interfere with the hatching?"
Granby cried, looking at Lawrence sidelong and dismayed.
"No. He has a right to make the best go of it he can, however he likes. Though he can't manage it in 15 minutes, someone else can have a try,"
he added, an attempt at consolation.
"And you may be sure 15 minutes is all the time he will have. That is all I can do."
"That is not all I can do," Temeraire said, mantling, "and I'm not going to sit about letting him throw nets and chains and hoods on the hatchling. I do not care if it is not in the shell any more. In my opinion, it is still quite near being an egg."
He realized this was an irregular way of looking at the matter, but after all, if the hatchling had not yet eaten anything, and if perhaps a bit of egg were still stuck to its hide, one could not be sure that it was ready to manage on its own, and so it was still one's responsibility.
"Anyway," he added, "I do not like him at all, and I don't see that he has any right to be a captain again. Just let him try and come here, and I will knock him down for it."
"You are not doing anything which Granby would not like," Iskierka said, jetting out a bit of steam.
"As though you had anything to say to it," Temeraire said coolly. "Anyway, you do things which Granby does not like every day."
"Only," Iskierka said, "when it is particularly important."
A monstrous lie.
"And anyway, that is quite different. You might think of Granby, since you are always on about how I do not take proper care of him. I'm not having him made not a captain, like you have done with Lawrence, only because you are being absurd again and worrying about hatched dragons," she added, which thrust hit home quite successfully.
Temeraire flinched involuntarily and put back his ruff.
"Why," Iskierko continued, "I have seen this Rankin person. He is smaller than a pony, even. I could have burnt him up to a cinder as soon as I cracked the shell."
"If he wanted you," Temeraire said, "he might have you and welcome."
But this was only a feeble bit of quarrelling, and not really a just argument. He put his head down and stared at the eggs unhappily.
"And," he said to Lawrence a little later, "if the egg does not take him, I suppose he will want to try the second, and then the third. I'm sure he will not just go, when he has come all this way, where no one wants him, only to be difficult."
"Only to have another dragon. But so far as that goes, I'm afraid you may be right," Lawrence said, low. "But there is not much we can do about it, my dear, if we do not care to put Granby in a very awkward position and make our own the worse. The eggs are not formally in our care at all, but his."
"But Arcady charged me with his," Temeraire said, "and I gave my word. Surely that makes me interested."
Lawrence paused and agreed, somberly.
"That does put another complexion on the matter."
But he did not offer any other solution, except squashing Rankin, which would have been quite unfair, as a matter of relative size, and which Lawrence insisted was not to be contemplated, despite Admiral Roland's letter.